Right, good morning everyone.
Morning.
So as Gregory mentioned, I've been a teacher and obviously a parent as well. I've got two children who are now adults, but one of the things that both teachers and parents strive to do is to equip children to be able to navigate life in their subsequent years. So most of us in that situation have probably got 20 or 30 years head start on them. And so that enables us to realise what challenges may well be ahead and to train and equip them so that they might be able to negotiate those things. And as Paul refers in Ephesians 6, he talks about putting on the armour of Christ as a way to help to navigate the challenges that we'll face in life. So we've got the shield of faith and the helmet of salvation, the gospel of peace, the sword of the Spirit, and the belt of truth and so forth. So equipped with all of those, it gives us the confidence and courage to negotiate life's challenges. However, despite how well prepared we might be, there are times when we are often thrown something that we don't know how to deal with. Okay, and a few months ago that happened to me. I was driving from Alice Springs to a remote Aboriginal community about 700 kilometres away. I was going there to do some Bible reading to help Aboriginal people there with their literacy in their own language and also in English. And I was going to be out there for 4 or 5 days. So on the first day I got out there, the first afternoon I was out in a Toyota troop carrier, which was the Fink River Mission had loaned me because I was doing this work on their behalf. And on the first afternoon, I pulled up at the accommodation and went to lock the back door of the troop carrier, and the key just sheared off. So if you know those sort of the keys that they have had on Toyotas, they're fairly thin at the neck, and I didn't actually turn it that hard, but it sheared off. And in the next 30 seconds to a minute, it all came to me, the implications of what had happened, what I'd done, because this was the same key that used for the ignition to start the vehicle. I didn't have a spare, it wasn't my vehicle, and I went into this sort of semi-panic mode, I guess, when you realise the enormity of the problem. So then I thought, foolishly, if I could somehow get the rest of this key out of the lock, draw it out somehow, or take the lock apart, I might somehow be able to tape it up and use it and it'd be functional again, which was very foolish, of course, because had I been able to do that and stick it up and stick it in the ignition, it would have then been locked, stuck in the ignition, and I'd have been in real trouble. So after trying to disassemble the lock and everything else to try and get it out, I ended up giving up, and I realised I'd need to ring up the Fink River Mission to tell them what had happened. And they were very sympathetic, and fortunately they had a plan that they could send a spare key down on what we call the bush bus, which goes twice a week out to this community. But that was on a Monday and it wasn't going to get there till Wednesday, which happened to be fortunate, because I was staying there until Friday, so at least it was going to arrive sometime while I was there. But that experience caused me to reflect on a passage in the scripture where the disciples also were confronted with quite an overwhelming problem. And that was the occasion of the feeding of the 5,000. So you can imagine the scene. Jesus is there all afternoon, and his sermon's probably going on longer than Gregory's. And the people there are starting to get restless. Okay, it's getting late, the sun's starting to go down, and there's probably a bit of a groundswell of grumbling to the disciples, saying, you know, when's he going to stop so that we can go home? And so the disciples then go and report to Jesus and say, shouldn't we stop and send these people away so they can get fed? And Jesus' response to them is, well, you feed them. So, which, of course, floored them, and they said, well, you know, even if we all worked for 12 months, it wouldn't be enough just for everyone to have a mouthful. So here was an overwhelming problem that the disciples couldn't fix either. And so Jesus simply said, well, sit people down, sit them down in groups of 50. And then he asked, well, what have you got? And eventually, as we know, certainly in John's gospel, there's a boy here, a lad here with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And that's all we've got. And some would say that the miracle occurred because, you know, this boy was generous to offer his lunch, and so then everybody else produced their lunch, and there was enough. But I don't think that was true for a minute. So Jesus took what they had, and then what did he do? He blessed it. He thanked God for what he had. He thanked God for what he had, and then things began to happen. You know, the fish and the loaves began to multiply. People were able to be fed, had more than enough to eat. And I was thinking that too for my situation. First of all, I had a lot to be thankful for, even though I had a significant problem. Because first of all, I hadn't locked the rest of the car, so I could at least get in through the front doors and climb in through the back and get stuff out. The car was parked outside the accommodation, which meant that at least it wasn't... If this had happened on the way, I could have been 400 k's in and been between places. So I had a phone, I could ring up, and although I had to be patient... Help did eventually come, and the problem was overcome. Yeah. And often that's the situation that we need to put ourselves into, that whatever we have, you know, when this problem is, well, what have you got? What have you got? It might be something up here, might be something in your hand. Then the principle is to give thanks for that and to wait and see. It's similar... instance in the Old Testament where, if you remember, Moses had the people of all the Israelites behind him at the Red Sea, and the Egyptians were coming behind, and the Israelites saw them coming, and they started complaining bitterly, you know, we're going to be killed and so forth, did you bring us out here, etc., etc. So Moses then knelt down to pray, and then God said to him, get up, what have you got in your hand? And it was the staff. So he said, raise the staff, and he did, and the waters parted, as we know. So sometimes it's necessary for us to be patient, and the problem we have might be something that we mentally can't solve. It might be a challenge, like on the property, how am I going to fix this, how am I going to do that? And David, in one of the Psalms, in Psalm 16, talks about how God instructs me in the night, or counsels me in the night. So we know quite well that there's a saying, if you've got a problem, sleep on it. Sleep on it. Well, that's possibly where it comes from. And so many times in history, particularly with people who have been Christians, who maybe they're scientists, mathematicians and so forth, have come to this dead end, and then they've prayed, and eventually God has revealed to them what the next step is. Okay? So when I'm next confronted by a problem like a breakdown on a remote road or whatever, the first thing I've got to learn is, as Jack Absalom once said, if you've got a problem in the bush, the first thing you do is put the billy on, sit down and think about it. Because often the worst thing you can do is make the problem twice as bad by rushing at something. And so sitting down, having that composure, looking to see what you've got, what's in your toolkit. If you haven't got anything, give thanks. And so many times I've heard about people who've been stranded and along comes somebody in a car and he's a mechanic or whatever, and they've been able to get out. So I'd just like to encourage you with that, because there is always going to be times ahead for us where we are stuck. But there is a way. And for that we can give thanks, because God looks out for us, and he doesn't basically want us to be left there stranded, particularly when he's called us to his good purpose to be doing something. So, thank you.